Hey, Jonathan Goodman here. I have super exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, that I've been talking about forever, is almost here. This is published by HarperCollins. The president of Shopify endorsed it. The editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine endorsed it. This thing is going to blow the roofs off, and I'm asking that you please pre-order your copy today on your local Amazon, wherever you buy books. It's available. It's called The Obvious Choice. Hope you pre-order it. Hope you love it. Welcome back to the Obvious Choice podcast. I am feigning energy today, my friends, because I have a very, very busy day, but I'm happy to be here with you, Amber. I'm happy to be here with you, Wynn. And you, dear listener, I'm going to call you Maggie for no good reason. Hi, Maggie. Good to see you again.
Mags.
I want to start with a story, Mags. No, I like Maggie. I'm going to start with a story, Mags. Maggie, damn it. It's about before we had kids. So before kids, Allison and I went on a 48-day road trip. We rented a car in Calgary. We visited 16 national parks and monuments across Alberta, Washington, Oregon, California, British Columbia. Basically, we started in the center of the country. We went down, crossed the border into the United States, kicked it out to the coast, came back up to Vancouver. We had waypoints, but no route. We had a paper map, but no GPS. The goal wasn't to expediently visit a site, take a picture, check it off, and move on to the next. It was to wander with a vague plan, enjoying the freedom to edit our path as we saw fit. In the backseat of the car of the rental car was a single knife and a cutting board. Dinner most nights was Walmart chicken and raw veggies. One night we actually did indulge and ate at the local Chinese restaurant in a tiny town in Washington State. That was not a mistake that we made twice. And beyond one special night at the Fairmont Chateau Lake Louise for my birthday, we didn't book a hotel in advance. If we liked a place, we stayed longer. If we didn't, we moved on. When we had enough driving for the day, we found a roadside motel. I'm feeling stuck, a friend of mine told me. He said that he hates his work. He dreads going to the job site. He sees his two children a lot, but he's never there with them. His phone often buzzes after hours, and he feels that he has to check it. I was at his place. Whoa, that's a nice collection, I said, and I pointed to his liquor cabinet. I started drinking whiskey at night to relax. Just one most nights, sometimes two or three, he told me. After getting his master's degree, my friend got hired by somebody his family knew. The business grew. He became its number two. Days turned into months, which turned into 1 year, then two, and now 12. For almost the entire time, he's dreamed of doing something else, but he's worked hard to get to where he is. Leaving feels like there's too much to lose. So he stayed. Stuck. My friend has become good at a job he no longer wants to do. The forces keeping him there are strong. It started with the sunk cost associated with his costly degree, not to mention 7 years of university. Then he leased an expensive truck, bought a home with his wife, and leased a second expensive SUV. All these things. Why don't you quit? I asked. We can't afford it, he said. My friend and his wife make plenty, and yet he feels stuck. And that's because as his income rose, so did his status in his community, his ego as a provider, the perceived standing he had within his extended family, and of course, the things that he owned. If you're not working on your ideal day, chances are you're working on someone else's. I think back to that road trip with Allison. The reason why it was so wonderful wasn't because we hiked the Narrows in Zion, or snowshoed in Mount Rainier, or collected obsidian in Newberry. It's because we had no walking costs. It's because if we liked something, we stayed. And if we didn't, we left. We weren't beholden to anybody or anything. We were free. The probability that the first choice you make is roughly one in a million, said Peter Drucker. If you decide your first choice is the right one, chances are you are just plain lazy. Freedom isn't being able to live out your days on a beach or buy private planes. It's more simple than that. It's the knowledge that you have options. Freedom is providing yourself an opportunity to fail. Freedom is the ability to do what you want, when you want, with who you want. The fewer options you have, the less freedom you've earned, and the more stuck you will feel. Now, you might never decide to exercise your options. That's fine. Stay with your work. buy the costly car, join the bougie country club. Wonderful. But only accept those things under one condition, that sticking with them is your decision, not one imposed upon you, by your own design, if for no other reason than your acquiescence to a certain lifestyle. Freedom is knowing that you can move on, even if you decide not to. Freedom is control. If you want to be free, you must keep your walking costs low. My friend has skills, savings, and spousal support. What he views as prohibitive walking costs are to any outsider an illusion. Quit your job, you tell your cousin, though you secretly burn the heck out yourself. Cut off that abusive relative, you say, thinking about your own crazy-ass aunt. Sell that bad investment, stop throwing good money after bad, you advise, still holding on to your bag of meme coins that you bought at the height of whatever idiotic hysteria you were bored enough to pay attention to. Humans are skilled at counseling others with logic, while simultaneously drowning in our own emotions and fabrications. Are you really as tied down as you think you are? For many of us, we've been working hard to get to some endpoint, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and if we quit, it feels like all of our work up until now has been for nothing. But is that true? You might be thinking right now that you can't afford it. What is it? I've no idea. But you're worried that whatever it is, you can't afford it. Well, have you done the math? I'm not advising you to quit, and I'm not advising you to stay. I'm simply hoping that you'll consider what you're actually scared of and whether it's justified or not. Money is part of the equation, but is often the least of it. The most painful, according to Mark Albion in Making a Life, Making a Living, is the loss of self-esteem and standing in other people's eyes. If you're worried about what they're going to think, well, who are they? And do they matter? A while back, I called a mentor to talk over some complicated things with my business. After an hour of going through all of the details, I waited for his advice. John, it doesn't matter, he said. I wrote that down. Doesn't matter. Got it. All right, cool. Then I looked up at him. And he chuckled to himself and shared an analogy he heard from the pastor Stephen Furtick. You're stressed out because you have this feed, he said. And everything on it is the same size. Because it's the same size, you think it carries the same weight. You are living in a state of stress because you haven't learned how to weigh it out. You haven't learned that 99.99993% of what's keeping you up at night doesn't matter. And that's why you don't have energy left for the few things that do. This matters. Not that. Furtick preached that the earth is a solid rock, but if you don't know how to stand on this rock with the right balance, your fears will push you around and you'll always feel unsettled. Okay, so that last quote isn't a direct quote. Furtick actually said that the devil will push you around. But I've come to understand that anytime religious people use the word God, you can sub in the words us or hope. And anytime that they say devil, you can just sub in fear. How do you ever expect to find peace when your life is split into so many pieces? Life is too short to be anxious. Anxious about paying off the things we don't need but somehow own. Anxious about maintaining relationships that no longer serve us. And anxious about doing work we're good at but no longer want to be doing. You know, I was looking at the word anxious when I was writing this. And I noticed that in the middle of the word is the letter I. And at the end are the letters U. S. Us. And I was thinking about why we work so hard. That too often the work begins to feel like the point. Or why we buy the stuff that we buy. That too often the stuff we buy begins to feel like the point. Or why we let others' perceptions guide us on how to show up in the world. That too often satisfying our own egos feels like the point. And how all any of this does is...
Hey, Jonathan Goodman, and I wanted to invite you to pre-order my next book called The Obvious Choice. This is my first traditionally published book. It's been published by HarperCollins. Sam Parr, if you listen to My First Million podcast, called it a much-needed recalibration for a business generation that's focused on the wrong thing at the wrong time. Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, said that if you want to win in business without feeling like you need to win the internet, you gotta get this book. So why pre-order it instead of getting it when it's ready? Well, there's two reasons, really. The first is that It's really, really beneficial for me, selfishly. It helps me a lot. My publishers love it. But the second beneficial for you is you actually lock in the best ever price. No joke, I pre-ordered a book that was $40 not too long ago. And because the price went down over the pre-order period for like a day to $29.99, when the book arrived to me on the day of the launch, I actually got refunded by Amazon $10. Because when you pre-order a book on Amazon, you lock in the lowest price ever. So if Amazon ever lowers the price, which they often do, you're gonna get that price and get refunded, whatever the difference is from when you pre-ordered it. So there's benefit to you, there's benefit to me. Please pre-order the book, the obvious choice, anywhere you buy books, but Amazon gives you this other benefit. Hope that you love it. Hope you're good.
To make us feel anxious. And then I noticed the solution staring me right in the face. When you let yourself become owned by your belongings, your work, or your ego, you become suffocated by your own selfishness, stuck in the middle, obsessing over things that don't matter, only thinking about the I, about yourself. The way to escape anxiety is to go from I to US. It's right there in the word. By minimizing needless choices, unnecessary necessities, and your attachment to empty extravagances, you maximize your time, your energy, and your money to share with others. That's how you take control. And when you're in control, you become free. That word anxious, eh?
Oh, that was a pause.
That's the end. That's all I got.
I'll never be able to distinguish between your pause, your commas, and your periods, John.
I know.
It's just not ever going to happen.
Yeah.
And I believe in the 3-second rule because I'm a good coach. And I know that you count 3 seconds for you, but it's like a 12-second rule for you because you can pick right back up at any second.
A great rule for being a good listener and a good human. A terrible rule for podcasting. Although there are certain podcasts where there are extended pauses and it's actually really effective. There have been some really, really good ones. I remember seeing one example where Lex Friedman was interviewing, I think, Elon Musk. And he asked Musk a question. And there was a 23-second pause.
That's forever.
And they both just sat there in silence. And then Musk went and answered. And the skill of an interviewer on a podcast to know his subject that well, to know that Musk was just processing.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. See,
as a listener.
I fast-forwarded that shit, obviously. But
yeah,
it was
about
amazing.
To say, that's exactly where I was going. Like, as a listener, I'm giving you a good 10. Like, if I don't hear something for 10 seconds, I'm out of there, man.
Yeah,
I don't know how to fast forward podcasts. I'm sure it's one of the buttons that I never touch.
What speed do you listen to podcasts on?
I'm a regular speed dude, man.
Really?
And I was initially shocked by people saying I listen to almost everything at 1.5 speed. But I think it's because I don't have access to my device when I'm listening to podcasts, because I almost exclusively listen to a podcast or an audiobook when I'm training. So when I'm working out, I'm detached from my device, so I can't really, you know, so I just listen to all of it.
Love the line about... I'm 1.2. I found that makes a big 1.2? Difference for me. Yeah, I'm 1.2, and I like that a lot. I find 1.5 if the hosts are a little bit boring, but I'm trying to, like, gain a little bit of information. Like, maybe there's something I'm trying to learn. I'll hit it at 1.5. I might even hit it at 2. But I can't listen at 2. Wow. I can't make sense of anything. But that's my way of almost scanning to try to find. It's like a command F almost, and then I'll slow it down. But if I'm just going on a walkabout or doing dishes or something, I don't listen to anything while training these days because I do group classes with music. But because I just can't think about training right now, I just don't have the capacity for it. But if I'm like doing dishes or whatever, I'll listen on 1.2. Most of the time, never 1. Like, whenever my phone is stuck to 1, because I'm listening to music or something, and I forget to set it to 1.2, I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, even if I'm listening back to my own podcast, I'm like, man, I was really boring that episode.
the Did you say Command F? Is that like Apple stuff or something? The Macintosh?
Control F, whatever, man.
Okay,
it's
just, all right.
Find function.
It makes a difference.
I love how
to Gen X.
No Apple person just assume that like what we're saying makes sense. I love how Android people feel like they need to stand on this fucking pedestal and be like, I need you to know that I have decided to buy a lesser quality item than you because I'm different and I chose Android. So I'm going to make sure that it comes up in conversation that I don't know what Command F is.
It's not that we're different. We're better. There's a distinction between the two. And no, yeah. I don't know. I was looking for the command on my Windows laptop, as you were saying on my non-Apple. But I love the line about finding peace when your life is in pieces. It's very cleverly written. Way to go. And I like the Stephen Furtick comment and how you articulated the non-religious version versus the religious zealot version of the because that's important. It's important.
I just find that people get so bogged down whenever there's any mention of religion or religious leader, and it's not even like outside of their own religion. It's even like a different sect or a different leader within their own religion. And they get so bogged down by the examples, and as a result, then they kind of miss perhaps the wisdom or the eloquence or the lesson in whatever is being said. And that used to be me a lot.
And so
figuring that out, it's like, oh, if I just read this through this filter, you know, God is just the communal us or hope. I mean, religion really... Man, it's hope. Like, you can listen to a lot of sermons from a lot of different religions, and the overall message that you're going to get a lot of the time is hope when it feels like despair. Keep at it, bro.
It's the
tap on the football player's butt. Like, that's all it is.
It's the most prevalent kind of religion that crosses the boundaries of religion. It's more readily acceptable for the masses because, as you know, Jesus lives in North Carolina. Sure. I've been privy to all types of religious preaching, and there's some in the area where Amber and I live. We've got some good old Testament fire and brimstone, you're going to hell for every single thing you do, preachers down here. But that type of religion doesn't really make it out of religious areas. But, you know, I know some pastors that, you know, within a minute of meeting them, there will be at least 40 things that you're going straight to hell for. Within a minute long conversation without question. But that doesn't travel. We call the things that Furtick and like Joel Osteen do, we call that prosperity ministry or prosperity preaching, okay. Because there's something hopeful and great waiting on you. But there's lots of places in the sticks down here when the only thing you're headed for is hell. You're going straight to hell for pretty much everything you've done. But I digress. I don't have anything else to say that's intelligent or funny. Highly unlikely.
Amber, do you have anything that's intelligent or funny?
No, not particularly.
Good.
No.
Good. So let's cut it here. This will be a short episode today. I have a lot to do, selfishly. So, you know, I'm just going to let you get on with your day. Listen to a comedy podcast or something. Check out the Conan O'Brien podcast. It's really, really good. If you're looking for something else to listen to and not ours, just, you know, laugh a little bit.
Highly
today,
recommend
perhaps.
That more than this.
Life is too serious. And there was an episode not too long ago with somebody named Dion Cole that I really enjoyed.
Dion Cole is hilarious.
He's thank you. Thank you. And get yourself an MC, an MCN like this guy.
Yes.
Anything you say.
Yes.
Yeah, check out that Dion Cole. I love it. Okay. Well, cool. 18 minutes. Nailed it. Bye.